This is CliffCentral.com.
I have such a fascination for what our guest does. A part of me kind of wishes I could, even in the discussion that we're about to have, live vicariously through him. Going into these caves, digging up fossils, discovering the origins of humankind. He's written a book called Almost Human, which is the astonishing tale of Homo Naledi. We've spoken to him before on the show a couple of times, but it's always a great pleasure and privilege to welcome Prof. Lee Berger to the studio, Mubs. He's here, and he has he's brought along a whole lot of our ancestors. They're all sitting outside in the green room right now looking at us. They really like that Young Thug song.
They look a bit old.
Well, millions of years old. We'll find out exactly how old in a second or two. But here he is. Everybody, Prof. Lee Berger. How are you, Prof? It's good to see you. Wait, hang on. Why is your microphone not on? There it is. Right.
I'm used to getting the National Geographic sort of theme song intro, you know, not the...
I thought of playing you something a little more sort of primitive.
But that was the MGM thing or something.
It was just
it?
A From big Holland. Fanfare. But you know what's probably more fitting? Let's start that again. I'm going to do this with this one because this is kind of what your work gets us going on. The opening scene from 2001, A Space Odyssey, where the ape man comes out and he smashes that bone against the rock.
Now, do you know that has its origins right here in South Africa?
Does it?
Do you know that scene is about Raymond Dart, and it was done by Stanley Kubrick because of the book African Genesis?
You're kidding.
Nope. It's the opening scene because of Makapansgat, where Raymond Dart had this idea that human ancestry was killer apes in the osteodonto-caratic culture, which was these ape ancestors killing each other in violence. And that scene was actually mimicking the damage done to a fossil we hold in our labs here at VITS with the exciting name of MLD2, but it literally is.
So was this MLD2 beaten to death with a bone?
That's right, because he thought the jaw had been broken on the side. And so almost every part of that scene takes its inspiration from a real fossil and a real scientific hypothesis, which was later disproved. But you know, it's a great history. There, you know, how did you pick? You see, psychic there.
Oh, there
it's like your Putin picture over there. You know, the one of you riding naked on a flying lion. I actually took a picture. I intend to tweet that later because Gareth, you know, it speaks volume.
It's a winged lion.
It's a winged lion with Gareth. Gareth with this, you know, buffed out
I'm brandishing an axe with flames coming out of
body, a Homo erectus would be proud of.
Prof, it's good to see you.
It's great to be here.
Hey, congratulations on the book, first of all. This has been a long time coming. And it's obviously just another publication in a long list of these by you in your never-ending quest to find out more about our origins.
You know, this is just such an amazing moment. Sometimes I will admit this to you, it's surreal that I came to Africa 28 years ago looking for fossils. I threw myself into it. I found, as you well know, we've known each other forever, I found bits and pieces. And spent, once I got to South Africa, 17 years without a big discovery. Sidibe came along, discovery of a lifetime. My son actually made it up.
Yeah.
I'll slip that in before you do.
Matthew.
And threw myself into that because this sort of discovery to a scientist only happens once in your life. And then Homo Naledi comes along. And Homo Naledi has been like a rocket ride. From the moment that Stephen Tucker and opened that laptop and showed me those images to an expedition 30 days later with those fantastic, incredible scientists that just happened to be women who went into these chambers to the announcement to it happened again and again and again. As you know, we announced another chamber. I told you last year when we were at a function.
It's like
this
is like a treasure trove, right? Yeah, I saw you at some event. I think it was at the U.S. Embassy or something.
Yep.
And you said to me, oh, there's big news coming. And that was the week that you announced that they found even more.
That's right.
I mean, you've probably got more. Have you guys pulled out more stuff than Leakey, than Dart, than any of them?
Sure, but I'd like it not to be a
it's
numbers
not a
competition.
No,
it's not a number. You know, we're very fortunate. These are extraordinary sites that we've come into. I think that I'll tell you where I like the numbers. I like the numbers because our science was dead. our science was thought to be over. There were major scientists that wrote in 2001. Tim White, top scientist, biggest finder of fossils to that point in 2001, wrote that this science was over. No new fossils. We should stop training young scientists, that the fossil fields are exhausted. No new discoveries. And that's why the number is important. Because what they tell us is there's more out there. And that happens to us every day. We've left thousands of remains in those chambers. We're now up to three chambers, not just two.
Do we have any idea? I want to get into the actual story of kind of humankind and where we come from, because it bears repeating, and it's changed. The whole tree, the plan, the family that we all descend from has obviously been refined and changed as we've made more discoveries. But with these creatures all finding themselves in these caves, do we have any idea of whether or not they fell in there and died? They were carried there and buried, essentially, by their living relatives. Do we know how they came to be in this place?
So I first have to set the stage of what Homo naledi is before I answer that question. Homo naledi is this tiny-brained, bipedal human relative. And I'm going to be very cautious with that last part because we don't know where it fits into the greater scheme of things. Imagine it's sort of 1.5 meters tall, but a brain the size of an orange. It's got these ape-like shoulders. It's got human-like hands, human-like feet, long legs.
Would you say dumber than a chimpanzee?
You can't. We don't know that.
Brain size comparison.
I thought you were going to say a politician, but it was not a chimps are hard to answer. We're still studying them. Okay. But here they are, seen on the high felt. We know that this population exists 200,000-300,000 years ago. They probably originated this species millions of years ago. They've been here all along, and suddenly we find them in these remote chambers. And I mean by remote, you have to squeeze through 18-centimeter slots to get to them. They are 40 meters underground, all these chambers. The chambers haven't changed, so we've eliminated all the idea that there were easier routes to get into. In fact, the expedition that I came out of 4 weeks ago, found bodies at the base of what we call the chute. That, if you've seen pictures of those underground astronauts squeezing through those things, those guys and girls came down this. We know that for a fact now. We found their bodies at the base of it. Why they're there is the big question. It's the million year question. It's the one we're after. We've eliminated that they were scavenged. We've eliminated that they fell in there into these more remote parts of this chamber. We've eliminated they were washed in there, that this was some mass death. There's no marks on the bones. There's nothing. And having been left with this sort of enigma, we came up with the least likely hypothesis that they were deliberately disposed and they're dead. And you might go, well, so what? We do that. Well, that's the point. Only we do that.
No
other animals don't do it. Elephant graveyards are fake. They're not real.
So, okay, that's the least likely explanation.
And yet it's the most likely in this scenario.
All right. We need to go back quite a long way. There's controversy around these things too. Because, as you say, we can't figure out where Homo naledi belongs on our family tree. Okay, or if she's even an ancient ancestor. She might have been from a branch that died off, that were killed off, that were eaten by our actual ancestors. Who knows? Where is the... Have we found that creature that is our Adam or Eve?
Right, right.
Do we know who
I won't
that is?
Use Missing Link. You're avoiding using that. I'll throw it out there and then get rid of it.
I don't like it because then the creationists come along and
it's not real. Okay, so here's the problem. Paleoanthropology, the search for understanding human origins, has dramatically changed. If I were seen here 15 years ago in this very seat as me, I would have probably been claiming that this is a direct lineal ancestor of ours, and I would have put it into some pigeonhole and argued that point very vociferously. Mm. Our field was based on scraps. It was based on tiny fragments of fossils found across this continent and now across the old world, and that's changing. We now have skeletons. We're finding spectacular fossils here. North of us, we're finding fossils across the planet that are saying the story's not simple. It's not easy. It's not a ladder for sure. That's the kind of linear look. It's not a chain of being. It's not a tree. It's more like a braided stream with interactions in the past. There's genetic sharing. That's sexed, you know, if you throw that out there as a sort of way of having evolution work. Different species are actually interacting with each other. It's complex. It's messy. And so my generation of scientists and the next generation coming along, they're saying, don't do that. Don't tell that story. Don't answer when Gareth, you know, presses you to say, where does this fit? We say we don't know, and we're quite proud of that because the story is messy right now. That's the way it should be in science. We went through an idea where we thought we had it figured out. The new discoveries tell us that's not true. That's not easy. It's not simple. It's not linear. And we're going to go through a phase where it's going to be quite messy. And then we're going to come out at the end of that with genetics, proteomics, and fossils in an abundance that, you know, my predecessors never believed of. And then we'll have answers, but it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be quick.
So let's be clear then. Your two greatest finds, Homo naledi, Australopithecus sediba, unrelated.
Don't know that either. I'd love to give you that answer too.
Which is older?
Well, sediba is the population of sediba is 2 million years old, right at that point. That is not its beginning, nor is it its end. That's what a lot of people forget. A lot of scientists forget that when they're arguing it. That when you find these discoveries, they're not a point in space with no previous story and no after
story. It could be anywhere in a space of like a million or 200,000 years.
Anything.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Anything. We just don't know. And so what's strange about sediba,
we don't even know how long Homo sapiens has been on the
exactly
planet.
And it gets older and older and older all the time. And so you have something like sediba and you go, oh, and it's Australopithecine, it's primitive, it's a climber, it's got these primitive teeth, and you'd say, well, it's the ancestral form, or it's at least something like the ancestral form of naledi, until you look at naledi and you say, but parts of naledi are more primitive, they should have arisen earlier than sediba. And then it becomes really ugly and complex because that opens up every possible.
For example, I found out that the brain of Homo naledi is the same size as in fossils millions of years older, like Lucy, right?
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
So this is confusing as all hell because they might not be in any way related. They might descend from something, you know, very
they may
long
be
ago.
A parallel. It is entirely possible that naledi could have originated at a time at or prior to Lucy at 3 million years. That's a staggering thing to say. Louis Leakey predicted that sort of idea in the 1950s because he didn't like the Australopithecines. He said they're not the pathway. And then he said there's something else out there. And you know, I'm probably the cryptozoologist's best friend now, and I don't want to be, by the way. But you know, I have to stand back and say we didn't know naledi existed until we found it. And we found it right in the middle of the most explored place on planet Earth for those very things. This site is 1.5 kilometers from Sterkfontein. It's 800 meters from Swartkrans. These are the two best known sites. They've been dug forever. Frank Peabody, the great explorer anthropologist, camped 150 meters from this site. And I've just made another discovery, what my teams have, that's 50 meters from where he camped. Another thing entirely.
This is not needle in the haystack thing. This is a tiny little, you've got a handful of straw, and somewhere in there is a needle.
Yeah, it's
and yet for hundreds of years it's gone.
We're finding it's more like you got a handful of straw and there's a handful of needles in there. We just never closed our hands and figured that out.
It's amazing.
They're everywhere out there, so, and they're going to be everywhere.
It stands to reason if we find this much stuff here, and obviously you know geography and geology and rain and all, you know, climate and all kinds of things must have had an impact on the fact that this is such a rich treasure trove of archaeological material. But it stands to reason that there might be all over the world so much more.
I am right now building teams and beginning to create the foundation to begin training exploration teams from developing world countries and developed world countries here in South Africa that we're going to launch across the planet. I'm going to Saudi Arabia in a week to look at training teams there. We're looking at Asia, China, India, the Congo, anywhere. You know, what something like sediba and naledi teach us is that we are often missing things in our own backyards. We have backyard syndrome. You and I have talked about that before. The idea that you don't see the places you know, think you know the best because you're so familiar with them. And so the goal, next goal is to put these extraordinary teams that are well-trained using the methods we've used to make these great discoveries out into their home countries, into these remote areas. And you know what? Guess what we're going to be talking about 2 years?
A new species?
The new things. The new discoveries out of these remote areas that we can't even imagine.
All right, so you say it's like a braided stream was the term you used when we look back at the let's call it the family we come from. Right. Is it possible that these different species coexisted at the same time?
Oh, it's certain. So let me paint the picture.
Australopithecines and...
Absolutely certain. And Homo naledi proved that. So let me paint that picture of a braided stream for people who don't have it in their mind. So imagine, if you will, a sort of one of those glacial valley images where there's a glacier at the top of the valley. Everyone has kind of seen a picture of that sort of idea. And off of it are rivulets of water that come down this large gravel moraine down to this huge lake at the bottom. That huge lake are the 7+ billion people today. You have this glacier at the top, and those water rivulets are the species that come out of the last common ancestor. Mm-hmm. That's what that glacier is. There's a central tendency to that. Mm-hmm. There are some main water areas that flow down the center of the valley.
Some streams are much thicker.
Some are thicker. Some are different. Some go off and vanish in the gravel. And you don't know that they probably don't contribute to that lake at the bottom. But some of them diverge, and then parts of them may stream back into that central area. That's the image of human evolution that these fossils, genetics, proteomics, all of these modern sciences are telling us is a better picture. Now, that shouldn't have been a surprise. All you got to do is look at every animal out there. I mean, I was just answering a tweet while I was watching you, besides your tweets, about someone said, well, if humans evolved from apes, why are there still apes? You know, it reminds me of one of those images where you have a kind of fat bulldog sitting drinking a beer, and it goes, if you know, I evolved from wolves, why are there still wolves? You
know, well, I heard something interesting the other day. I heard that if a wolf can impregnate some dogs.
Oh, sure they do. And they're closely related. Yeah, sure. But, you know, it's not just the ability to – we're finding that further and further apart, species that we thought were immutable, the idea that there were these kinds and that they were separate are not immutable.
Isn't it true that if you take our chromosomes and you smash them up and you count up all the different combinations, that you'll find a large proportion of human DNA is not really dissimilar to that of a banana?
That's true, but I don't like that one because, you know, the devil is in the detail. It's something like 80%, 75% of your DNA is shared with a banana. But that's an important thing about evolution. That just proves everything evolved on planet Earth. Every living thing.
Right.
We have found on this planet, from those chemosynthesizing things at the bottom of oceans to the anaerobic bacteria that you find in Shark's Bay in Australia to those fossils we dig up out here to bananas, to us, share the same DNA pattern. That's why it's so important to look for life on Mars or Europa or these places, because there's the big question. Is life a thing? Or has it separate origins? Because if that DNA is even one little bit different, we'll know it. We'll know it doesn't share our ancestry. If it's the same, that's why my friend Kevin Hand, who's the Deputy Chief Mission Specialist of the Europa Mission, I mean, just...
Wow, cool friend to have.
Oh, man. You know, I feel
he must be pretty
friend.
Pleased to call you a friend as well. Jeez, these are the people you talk to in your spare time?
That's right.
Wow. All right, he's the Europa, of course, a moon of Jupiter.
That's right. That's right. And you know, that's one of the reasons we talk and other scientists talk, like Alan Stern and myself, the Pluto mission.
Yeah, of course.
Horizons is because there are caves out there.
Okay, but hang on. You were going to make a big point here. You said if we find out that all life in the solar system, let's not even talk about the universe, has some kind of common ancestry.
Then we know all life in the solar system has a common ancestry. That's the big punch. It's a little bit like
you were gonna. I thought you were gonna give me more.
That's like you with panty liners, right? It's in the name.
right. What do we know for sure about our human ancestry? Because you're telling me that this glacial stream, this moraine, this is our ancestry if you plotted it out.
Yeah.
And obviously there's some places on that.
Before I tell you what we know, I'm sort of telling you what we don't know at the same time we tell you what we know is that.
That's how I know you're smart.
That it's complex, that what we are picking up are points on that. And so what we do know is that humans evolved, right? So that there's no question. We evolved from ape-like ancestors. We share that ancestor at some distant point with chimpanzees and bonobos and gorillas, and then further back with orangutans and gibbons, and take that on back. We evolved. That's a fact. The genes tell us that. The fossils show us that in real form. You can go see them at Maripang. They're there. They're reality. But now we get to the detail. How did that happen? What was the process? What was the exact mode and tempo? Who existed what and who had the most genes? Now, we spent 90 years as a science trying to say, I found the ancestor. You would have heard scientists stand up and say, this is. Heck, we just had a headline out of Europe. The most ridiculous headline.
Yeah,
with a canine that's probably not even a primate and a single tooth of a well-known ape species that existed in Europe 8 or 9 million years ago, and they said humans evolve in Europe. No, that's not what the evidence says. That's just that there were apes in Europe. That's not a surprise to science. We evolved out of these apes, but the dominant evolution of our story at this stage says we did that in Africa. Mm-hmm. We then had multiple migrations out of Africa. Constantly, what is startling about Africa is it constantly provides the sort of fresh new material to that journey. So if you use the example of the braided stream, the glacial moraine coming down to that lake, that central tendency, that's Africa.
Right.
Everything outside of it is a little sideshow coming in. I'd be looking at you. I'd put you what, 2.7% Neanderthal?
Probably, yeah.
You know, you're sort of. We can check that.
How can we check?
Well, all we got to do is we'll take your genographic cheek swab, and right. I will get that to you. And I'll tell you how Neanderthal you are.
Was the Neanderthal? They were wiped out by the Homo sapiens. We believe.
No, they weren't. That's why you have 2.7.
Were they interbred?
There was a little bit of hanky-panky sex going on.
I have an ancestor who looked a lot worse than I think, who mated with another ancestor who looked a lot worse than I think.
I wouldn't be so judgmental. I've seen pictures of the people beside you, and
But here's the thing, right? And the reason I bring that up, I'm being flippant, but I'm also hinting at something that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. When we look at the picture of our ancestor in here, if I showed people this, a lot of people don't like the idea that we might come from something like that.
That's
maybe
right,
it's
yeah.
his smile.
Yeah, you're showing Homo naledi, a reconstruction by John Gerchi.
Now, I don't have any problem. I watched Planet of the Apes last night, funnily enough. Great movie.
Homo naledi is like the real Planet of the Apes.
Right, now, I like the apes more in the movie than the humans. But the fact is that there's nothing embarrassing about any of this. It's actually very it's self awareness and acceptance of a kind of kinship with all the other animals.
Humans have spent thousands of years trying to tell ourselves why we are separate from nature.
Right.
We write the beginning of most religious texts start with the idea of A, why you're going to die and why we know that and other animals don't, and B, why we are separate and fundamentally different from all animals. That was true right up until the Victorian period when Darwin came up with the ideas of evolution as well as Wallace, and then we started finding fossils. Mm. And the fossils start saying, wait a second, there are things that are in between not only us and other animals, but other animals and other animals that no longer exist. And that sort of built an idea of an inconvenient truth building. But eventually people like Jane Goodall would ruin everything when she sees chimpanzees using manufacturing and using complex tools. And Louis Leakey says, well, we're going to have to rewrite everything we know about what it means to be human. And then DNA comes along and you find out you're related to a banana. And then you find out, but wait, that's not all, that you're in excess of 98% related to bonobos and chimpanzees. And those little couple of percentages are really important in that we all share that same DNA. And then we find fossils like Homo naledi, which undeniably say they're experiments in the past that are part of our story. But as complex as we are, yet fundamentally different. And all of that tells us that we are not special. And now we've got chimpanzees doing ritual behavior, throwing rocks again and again at the bases of trees. We see animals mourning. We see birds making complex architecture and structures that borders on art to attract mates, because none of the two situations are alike, and they change it and alter it. We're not special. We're just part of this planet. But we've got to stop trying to rip ourselves from this planet.
Yeah, and this whole idea of special is in belonging, actually.
We don't have dominion over this planet. That's the fundamental idea. That we are an animal on this planet.
And some of our ancestors some of the collateral branches may be extinct because they made bad decisions.
Or us. It could have been us ourselves. We make bad neighbors.
Everywhere humans go, we
ask the lion that was standing right here under where this studio was 150 years ago how bad a neighbor we make. People should think about that.
Yes.
Think about what was standing here right now. 150 years ago, there was a giraffe here.
Yeah.
There was a lion here. There were things here. There were humans here. This is the only continent we're an indigenous animal on. I mean, that's kind of cool. If you're in North America, you're shameful. You're an illegal immigrant no matter what you are.
They don't have apes anywhere in the Western Hemisphere.
No, they don't. Now, and apes were kind of a phenomena of the old world. That is, that they were phenomena of Africa dominantly. Then there were some in Europe. And, of course, there are in Asia, right? You've got orangutans and gibbons. And there's a long history of that, Gigantopithecus. We don't have any apes in North America until probably about 15,000 to 25,000 years ago when humans arrive.
Okay, wow. So all those other animals, the larger mammals in North America, were completely unexpectedly
it must have
assaulted by apes.
It must have been terrible. And they were just there were some things sharing sort of transitions across the Americas. There was just a study came out saying some of the saber-toothed tigers were actually moving back and forth between the Americas. Bears did, obviously. Those largely were Arctic species.
And
we couldn't really do that until we conquered those very extreme areas to actually move into those. So it must have been a big, bad surprise. It, of course, caused one of the greatest extinctions in history when we arrived, because that's what we do.
Yeah, we just destroy everything else.
That's why we didn't open the cave up, right?
All right, but there were also a bunch of, there were those branches of like almost pygmy men somewhere in Southeast Asia. That's it.
Flores. So Flores, and I don't use the word men or women. That's such a human term. They're another species.
Yeah.
They exist at the same time.
A homo species.
That
so
homo
they're in our genus.
Little tiny brain, very strange. Again, that's an island. It's an island, though. I think that's what so thrilled me when we finally figured out how old Homo naledi was. You know, everyone goes, 200,000, 300,000 years ago. That's a long time. That's nothing. That's yesterday. They would have almost certainly met modern humans. You know what's even more radical and fun about it? We've been sitting as archaeologists studying the origins of modern humans in southern Africa. You've heard about caves like Blombos and Pinnacle Point and all the artwork we start seeing at 150, 200,000 years and how complexity is arising. Do you know how many fossils of humans we have to go along with this rise of modern human story? Almost zero.
Yeah.
We don't know who made that. And all of a sudden, Homo naledi plops down right in the middle of this. And so people like me and my colleagues sort of viciously go to our colleagues at conferences and go, how do you know Homo naledi didn't make that? It's challenging the very fundamentals of archaeology. We now, with Homo naledi wandering around the landscape of this continent of Africa, cannot know, outside of extraordinary circumstances, who made what. What an awesome challenge. The yeah. textbooks have to be, that's always said too lightly. You know, you have to rewrite the textbooks. You really do
must
have
be,
to rewrite the textbooks.
It must be really tempting for you to jump to conclusions sometimes.
I don't want to.
I know you're a scientist. This is what the difference between you and all the rest of us is. If Sia or Ben or Mabali or I were busy digging around in a cave and we found a skull, we'd immediately assume X, Y, and Z. And that's the danger, right?
That's right.
That's where you make that's the right. mistakes.
You step back from that temptation of saying we – even more than that, not only interpretation that you must be careful of, you must examine your assumptions, your pre-held beliefs – which are in fact anti-science. The idea of what you know, that storyline that you know is true. Well, the very point of science is to challenge constantly that storyline. A lot of people find that very uncomfortable. But it's also for someone who has that kind of that makeup, that gene inside of them. It's this thrill. It's like being on a roller coaster for the first time every moment of your life.
What is the most important part of this skeleton to look at for a start? I mean, you begin with the head because the head tells you what it looked like, and we're humans and we like to see pattern recognition.
I think the most important part for sort of the public to look at is probably the head, because you see a face. It's why you open to that picture. You want to
be able
into
to look at your
eyes.
Ancestor,
but I'll give you a funny answer. There isn't a part that's unimportant.
Sure,
it's the whole thing. The critical message of Naledi, Sidibe, these new skeletons being found in other parts of the world is that they are skeletons. That we are now looking at things from where they touch the ground as they walk to where their head gets sunburnt in the sky. And every part of that anatomy tells a story, and it's often not the story we thought from just looking at the head.
What do you dream that you will find that will help you answer all these questions? Because you couldn't have dreamt that you would find Sidibe and that you'd find Naledi.
No, I couldn't. I mean, I said thinking I'd find out.
What kind of thing would you love to just discover that would answer a whole heap of questions?
I'm going to answer it in two ways. One is the kind of fun way, because it's perhaps the deep down, more honest way, something completely unexpected. It's why I'm going to be going into these sort of Central African jungles and places like Saudi Arabia, which haven't been explored, because I want to find something that challenges what I think I now know. You know, the kind of ideas that I think I'm getting it clear. I think I've got these ideas and these grand synthesis of braided streams and where this kind of picture fits together and how they're complex. And I'd like to be thrown off that horse. So that's what I like to find, really.
So you want more uncertainty?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because then we know in that instability, we know we're learning something. That's where science progresses. But if I had,
that's the fun answer, all right?
That's fun. And the hard answer is I'd like to find an ape that a paleoanthropologist like me is willing to call an ape and not a hominid ancestor. And the reason I say that this is quite a deep, complex story. I do believe some of the very primitive apes that have been found in Africa, particularly some of these things in Europe, have been sort of pitched as human ancestors. Headlines, there were headlines today and yesterday about that. And I think that's got to stop. And I want to be the person who finds extraordinary fossils, well-preserved fossils, that are apes. And we'll say, you know what, these are apes. But these are that outgroup.
How do we draw the line?
Well, because there are things, if I found a chimp, I would know in a fossil chimp that it's not a human ancestor. I wouldn't allow that term to enter.
Okay.
And I think that there's so much temptation.
Where is that line, so that we can be absolutely clear? Because this is where a whole bunch of craziness comes in. You
right.
get these mad eugenicists. You
yeah,
get
sure.
people who believe that religious dogma is more important than any discovery we'll ever make. And then you get the people who want to investigate this stuff, but they're also scared to step on politically incorrect
sure.
toes. So how do we know the line between ape and man?
I would see that where you talk, we have a hominin lineage. These are the bipedal apes. These are apes that share a series of characters. They are adapted to terrestrial bipedalism fundamentally, although they may retain arboreal characteristics or climbing characteristics is probably a better word. They are omnivores. They have a high diversity in diet. They're very smart. They've begun to socially structure each other into areas, and you can see that in the fossils. Reduction.
So Caesar
in sexual...
from Planet of the Apes so far.
Caesar's probably right. If I found Caesar, the problem is he's not a biped.
He is. He walks.
No,
on his
no.
Back
he
legs.
Stands up. That's like a bear. You know, a bear does that. A dog
but
in a
his
circus
natural,
does
he would
that.
Gone yeah, all fours.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you know, you've got to get away. And that's exactly like Ardipithecus ramidus. You know, ramidus was a
who
fossil.
Was ramidus?
Ramidus was a fossil found that's 5-6 million years ago in Ethiopia, and they use this idea that it's sort of a biped, but it's got a prehensile foot. I believe that should have been called an ape. And if it had been called an ape, we would have had an outgroup. We could have then begun very openly compare it. But, you know, science is competitive. It's hard to get those things published in
So the person who discovered
general.
That didn't want it to be an ape.
Because they found that in a period where these things were incredibly rare. The idea that one fossil, much less a skeleton, makes a career.
So you say the prehensile foot?
Yeah, it's got a prehensile foot.
So it would have used those to grab branches.
That's right. And it's a bad sort of evolutionary
idea.
We can't grab
branches with our feet.
Well, you can.
We can?
You can. Yeah, haven't you seen, you know, watch a kid and watch people who climb well. But we're lousy at it. We're lousy at tree climbing generally, unless it's like palm trees. We do palm trees really well. Watch it do that. We're superb rock climbers.
Yeah.
We're better rock climbers than any ape. We blow rocks away. And that might have something to do with why Naledi looks like it does. This whole story, Gareth, is complex. Revel in it. Let's get more fossils. Let's get more ancient DNA. Let's tell this story and unravel our journey.
Is that DNA? We find it in the teeth. Where can we find some?
Oh, I was about to say, is there DNA? Yes.
No. I mean, in these fossils,
we've tried three times. So we made three shots at this. We failed all three times. There are signals that there are proteins there. We're going to try that.
Right.
We will again try DNA. Ancient DNA studies are brand new. It's a baby study. It just was invented a few decades ago. It's in its infancy. If you'd like to take a bet right now with me, and I'll take that bet, that we will get DNA out of Homo naledi, I'll say we will. Mm-hmm. And it won't be decades away. It'll be years away.
Well, we're getting good at separating these things and, you know, using a centrifuge and
digging them out of the right places. And seeing it and understanding how to purify it. And getting better and better areas. We have so many different localities with Homo naledi in it now that the chance of getting that one in a trillion
preservation. But maybe it won't even help us.
Oh, it will.
You think it will?
Oh, boy.
So what if we dig it out? What if we find enough DNA able to do a genome?
Oh,
let's
my
say
goodness.
Partial genome.
Gareth, okay. Now I'll X all the things I want to find in the real world out there, you know, in the macro world.
Okay.
And look at the microscopic world that, boy, DNA. Because you know what DNA of naledi would do? Not only would it tell us, is naledi related to us? Is it part of that braided stream? Did they interbreed? Are they species X that existed in Africa 200,000 years ago and interbred with us? And maybe they're the reason we're the way we are? Or are they some parallel branch that didn't interbreed? But regardless, even if that were true, we would see the roots of the genus in that DNA. It would be like having a time machine to look back 2-3 million years. And that would be stunning. The origins of diseases, the origins of the flaws that are in our DNA, the pathway. It would be like, you know where the story then starts. You know, you started your journey in Durban and we have Johannesburg today. You'd at least know the beginnings of that pathway and that they probably took one of those bad highways.
All right. Go into the world of imagination for a second, because I'm sure it happens to you when you're sitting out there in, you know, the fields, and you know you've got these caves underneath you, and there could be anything down there. Do you ever think about the sort of life that these creatures had?
All the time. I was sitting out there yesterday, out at the rising star site, as you know, those rain clouds were building up and stuff. And what's amazing about Homo naledi is because it's only 250,000-300,000 years ago, that landscape hasn't changed.
Right.
Much,
so they would have seen the same.
They would have seen broadly the same thing. And you know, sitting there on those rocks, that tornado had just come through 3 days ago, and watching, and it went through the back of the property. You see these tornadoes. That must have happened to them. Yeah. That kind of event. And you're sitting there going, you know, did they look up at this and ponder how this is happening. Were they thinking about what are they going to do tomorrow? Were they thinking about the interactions? Were they thinking about their own mortality?
They weren't at the top of the food chain.
Oh, I think they were.
They were?
I don't think you'd want to walk into. When we dig up these dead Homo naledi, everything from the infants to the very elderly and everything in between, they're the healthiest dead things you ever see. And
explain that to me.
They have no injuries on them. They're no diseases. If you look at their teeth, the enamel's forming very healthily, even as they're children. They're not stressed. You know what?
Oh,
when
really?
You have something that's not stressed and healthy in an environment, you know what that means? They are badass. And that they are sitting at the top because they're walking around going, you know.
Bring it on.
It's one of those shows you see where everyone goes, you know, pass me, hold my beer kind of thing. And it's when you see that in a fossil, you know that they're at the top of the food chain. And whatever they're doing, it probably means they have tool. They certainly probably had fire. And you know, they are controlling that environment. If they weren't, they'd be stressed all the time. When we find things like those robust australopithecines, you know, little crests on top of the head, when you find things like Mrs. Ples or Sidiba, their teeth, their developmental teeth, when you're looking at childhood, when your teeth are growing between 0 and sort of 12, 13 mm-hmm. years of age, they get these hypoplasias, these stress lines in them. Because every time you're stressed very, very badly, you're starving or things, you get these lines develop.
In your teeth.
Your teeth develop badly. And all of them have those. They're out there going, oh, you know, a bird's going to eat me.
Eat you. Everything's going to try and kill you.
I'm diseased. Oh, I'm interbreeding with my cousin. Oh, you know, all these things
right.
are bad.
It's terrible.
Naledi's not like that.
So Naledi's top of the food chain.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Not really scared. Scared of nature, maybe. Scared of...
I don't even want to go into those ideas. What is fascinating is that time period is exactly when we think modern humans are arising in Africa. We know there's at least one in Morocco that is a day to that. That's a large brain thing. It's a little archaic to us, more like a Neanderthal, but they're there. We have all this archaeology that we think is them. I mean, can you imagine if they ever met? Can you imagine that moment?
Well, this is
first contact.
Right. I mean, this. You say that it's almost certain that Naledi would have met modern humans.
Yeah, at some stage. Had to happen. Unless some catastrophic thing drove them to extinction. But the problem is they don't look like a species that's just living in a cave on the Witwatersrand in Krugersdorp and shopping at the Spar. You know, they are a healthy, long-legged species. They're going to be widespread. They're going to be all over the place. This is just one group.
There's a book I read in primary school. It was called Stig of the Dump.
I didn't read that.
There's a story about this kid.
did anyone else read Stig of the Dump?
This kid befriends this caveman. Like this, you know, this clearly different kind of Homo species.
Uh-huh.
And he lives in the house with them and... I mean, if you say that we coexisted as modern humans at some point with Homo naledi, whether we existed peacefully or not, likely not, imagine seeing in real life something that looks like you but isn't you.
Isn't it like one of those old an episode of Star Trek, except that, you know, the really early ones with Captain Kirk and all
yeah.
that, you know, where You go out, journey into the universe, and you encounter another species that is equally complex to you,
mm-hmm.
but completely different. And what do you do? That's what Star Trek's all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do in each and every one of these varying situations? Well, let me tell you, Gareth, if you go out there and stare at those bones at Maripang, or you go to this site and look at these caves, and certainly I realize this from the moment that we realized what we were dealing with, we just did. As human beings, we just met that species. Hmm. Homo naledi is that species. Okay, they're extinct, but it doesn't matter. How we treat them, how we deal with that, how it affects our understanding of the fossil record of our evolution from this moment onward, from the progression that brought us here, or the regression that brought us here, or whatever pathway that brought us to this moment, we just met something that says... We didn't invent everything. It's likely that we weren't the only thing that had these superpowers of the acknowledgement of history and the forward vision of a future, of a past, present, and future tense, of languages, of all these things. things like Homo and Leti might have done it. And if they did it, what's to say there aren't other examples that did
it?
We're not special.
Immediately to me, Neanderthal, that's already been accepted now. People are happy with that Neanderthals existed at the same time.
You and a couple of people, you and Stig of the Dump, are happy with that, but most scientists still fight over that.
They do.
The Neanderthal is a big brain. Neanderthals have brains bigger than yours.
Yeah.
And they have, and they share DNA.
Bigger than
with
Ben's? Them. Look at the size of that head.
Maybe not Ben's, but yours, certainly. They shared this world with us. They're effectively humans. They're effectively
right. Okay, so they wouldn't have looked that different.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You could. You know, the litmus test is.
So how do we even know they were separate?
It's a convenient term that we use to identify a morphology that we can see in the fossil record that exceeds modern human variation. That doesn't mean that a human is an appropriate term. If you dressed one up in a suit. That's just it. The man on the Gautrain test is, would you go flinging out of the car if that walked onto the, and the answer with Neanderthal is no, particularly if it was heading to, Pretoria and passing the rugby fields. But Homo naledi would empty the train.
Right. I mean, it's so difficult to get this figured out. As you say, there's no clear linear path to follow.
It's not a straight line.
Jesus. It's amazing. So what percentage do you reckon looking at me is Neanderthal?
I'm going to guess 2.7. I'll get a kit to you and we'll find out.
That's amazing. And what if we discover that, in fact, different people, let's say if we took me and Ben, or we took Mabali and Sia, and we discovered that we had different strains of different kinds of Homo ancestors.
We've already done that, by the way. We don't have to do that.
What does that tell us?
What we find out is this, is that firstly, all humans are infinitely related to each other.
Yes,
that is,
of course.
In essence, and we're talking of 99.9%. What we do see is that some populations of humans had little bits of other human species that we bumped into.
Are there any people on Earth?
Denisovans have, and Denisovans were found in the DNA in a single finger bone in a cave in Russia, and we now see people in Indonesia that have some of that DNA. Asians have that. Some Europeans, Africans have another species X, and that's shared with some people in Europe. And so we're a mutt.
Yeah,
the human species
that's the point too.
Is a mutt. We're
this
not a
kills
purebred.
It kills the whole argument around that we have these terrifically inert and unique.
What's that big dog show in England? The one that they have all the purebreds at. I think that humans sat back in their comfortable chairs watching TV, thinking that they were. If you were watching ourselves, we were watching that dog show. We're a little bit different from each other, but we're all purebred dogs. That's not true. Science, these discoveries, genetics tell us we're mutts. We're a bunch of mongrels. We're all over the place. That's what makes us great. All you got to do is have someone that has one of those purebred pooches and all of its problems and go to the pound and pick up a dog that was living in Alexandra. And you will know that
the dog from
Alex is stronger, it's smarter, it's bulletproof. That's us. That's our shtick.
That's how we survive.
That's our shtick.
Do we know about an approximate date for the entry of Homo sapiens into the scene? Are we getting closer to narrowing that down?
DNA, genetic studies tell us that it's somewhere in the region of 200,000 years. Again, that's the genetic origins. That's not our real origins. And again, it's a young science. I wouldn't be surprised if that clock shifts to 300,000, 400,000 years. We're learning, science is a corrective process. We're learning those things. We've got fossils of things that people like me sit and argue over with minute differences that are archaic Homo sapiens are not dating 300,000-400,000 years. I suspect we're going to see this big brained kind of tall, robust shape that we are probably has its origins in that 400,000 to 600,000 year range, maybe a little bit earlier. But that doesn't mean it's us. Yet, we're a complex thing to say. If I said describe a human, you'd start with the physical, and then you would get into the esoteric and the complex and the things. And those things are harder for us to see in the fossil record. They're not impossible. Holman Leddy proves we can see these things. Archaeology all the time is making advances. We have to step back and start. If we for some reason need a definition of us, which I'm not sure why, but if we need a definition of us to continue that separation from the world, then it's not an easy thing. And that's not a bad answer.
I like it. It makes sense to me. And you're not treading carefully. You're just saying this is all we know up to now.
Right.
What other species of our genus have existed contemporaneously with us?
Oh, a lot. So we've got Homo floresiensis. You mentioned
those. The ones from the southeast.
Island of Flores in Indonesia. We've got Homo naledi. We know that for sure. We have Neanderthals. We know that for sure. We are almost certain that Homo erectus existed at that time period in Asia. And
When I was at school, they taught me that Homo erectus was the step just before Homo sapiens.
Yeah, but that was when
they had only a linear.
They were doing a T-shirt lesson in evolution, with the guy at the end on the computer looking backwards going, "Turn back, we screwed it up." That's not true. That's not how it happened. There are others.
What about Robustus? I've heard about this one.
Okay, so Robustus, Paranthropus robustus, they're these big chewing teeth things. They were in East Africa. There's a thing
chewing.
Called...
Sia, does this sound good to you? Big chewing teeth thing.
Yeah, it's...
maybe not.
Maybe we can just give a little pass. I'm talking to a guy who struggled with what does a panty liner do?
True.
And where does it go?
Just understand your audience. Right.
Give me a break.
That's the golden moment of George.
So they are thought to have gone extinct about a million years ago under the pressures of things like Homo erectus and other things. What Holman Leddy tells us is don't bet on that. You know, that's just what the fossil record to this point was telling us.
This is so cool. Yeah. You know why I love this? This is like you wake up, you never knew you had cousins. And then you find out that your uncles and aunts had a whole bunch of kids they never told you about.
And they're cooler than you.
And they're cool. Like you want to know about them, and they're going to be slightly like you in some ways and slightly different to you in other ways.
That is the game.
We're figuring out our family.
That's the game.
So if they all existed at the same time as us, maybe we were real bastards and wiped them all out. Who knows? Maybe we got along with some. Maybe
they wiped us out occasionally too.
Sometimes they did that. Sometimes we bred with them. Sometimes they didn't want to breed with us.
Now you're getting the braided stream.
Yeah. I like this. God, your work is great.
Oh,
isn't that fantastic?
You know, I work with the most wonderful people.
Now you're going exploring in the jungles and the deserts.
Yeah. Why not? They're there.
You'll never get bored.
And then someone said, you know, what's the best place? I've traveled all over the world, obviously, like you. And what's the best place you've ever been? I said, the next place I haven't.
Wow. What a thing to say. All right, so where's the next place on your agenda?
Saudi Arabia. I'll be there.
When do you go?
I go on the 2nd.
And what are you hoping to find? Whatever you find.
Whatever I find. Anything. I gave you that answer earlier.
Jesus. What an incredible life. I mean, you must be so happy that you in some ways, because I know how much work has gone, and you said you had to wait 17 years before you made a major discovery. Most people don't have patience. They would have given up. So this is by no means any slight on your hard work and the enormous amount of effort that you've put into doing this. But the luck of finding Sidibe, finding Naledi, who knows what else you're going to find.
And surrounding yourself with great people who make
you lucky.
Sure,
I know. You always give the team credit. I get that.
That is the trick in life.
This is so great. You see, we're rewriting our own history as we discover more information.
That's it.
And what's nice about your kind of history is it doesn't matter what the story is, because the evidence is coming, and we'll be able to figure out the story later.
That's it.
It might not happen in your lifetime or in mine, but we'll get there.
That doesn't matter. But these things, you know, one of the privileges of being a paleoanthropologist at this period in history is you know that these objects you're discovering are arc objects. You know what arc objects are? Arc objects are these things
that we would save.
We would save
if everything went away.
That's right. And we had to put on a spaceship and go occupy another planet. What were the things we take with us that would be precious about Earth? These are those things. For a million years, if we're still writing about ourselves, talking about ourselves, these form part of that narrative.
arc objects. Keep finding them.
I intend to.
Thank you, Prof.
Thank you.
What a pleasure to see you again.
Always great to be at Cliff Center.
Professor Lee Berger, he's just published a beautiful book. John Hawke's also there. And Almost Human is the title of it, The Astonishing Tale of Homo Naledi. What a great book. You've written inside it. You said to me, never stop exploring. You're the explorer. I could see you going into the jungles like those guys in the 1800s with the National Geographic Society, the Royal Geographical
Society. You don't need to. It's in your own backyard.
Yeah, well, my backyard's not as exciting as the places you go to. Give me a break. Please, my backyard. This is a man who's going deep down into caves that no human's been in for a million years. It's incredible.
This is CliffCentral.com.